WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It is Monday here in The Opening Bell. The United Nations Climate Action Summit begins today in New York. As that conversation begins among world leaders, insurance industry analysts have been having conversations of their own about the worst-case scenarios and whether or not insurance will be able to cover all of the predicted catastrophes, many of them that could impact us. Joining us this morning is Matthew Favis, a finance correspondent at The Economist, who's been reporting and covering a lot of this from the insurance angle. Matthew, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve.
How are you?
Good morning, Steve. Yes, very well. How are you?
So the question, I guess, is, you know, we look at all of these potential scenarios. The insurance companies are dealing with a lot of these catastrophes right now, aren't they?
That's right, yes. It's already very real. So if you look at how climate change is playing out for insurance companies, there are three main effects, perhaps, that we could single out. The fact that insurers are already seeing catastrophic events of unprecedented scale. So if you look at Hurricane Dorian, for example, which earlier this month battered the Bahamas and the Carolinas, this was one of the two largest storms ever known to make landfall in the Atlantic. In July, you had Hurricane Barry, which brought the heaviest rainfall ever measured to Arkansas. And last November, California saw wildfires over the largest area ever recorded. So these events are record events, for one. But secondly, these highly destructive occurrences are also becoming more frequent. So, you know, there's a good stat for that. If you look just at the U.S., between 1980 and 2015, the U.S. saw an average of 5 events each year, causing over $1 billion in damage. And if you look since 2016, the yearly average was 15 events like that. So that's quite striking. And I guess the third thing is these events are getting harder to predict because insurers use models. These models use data. And a lot of this data comes from the past few decades. And a lot of this data is already obsolete. And it's making it difficult for insurers to predict when losses will arise. All the more so as these events tend to interact with each other. So if you look, for example, at the 20-centimeter sea level rise that we've seen at the tip of Manhattan since the 1950s, it's estimated that Superstorm Sandy, which struck the U.S. in 2012, was 30% more destructive because of that. So all this is making it very hard for insurers to know exactly when these very big mega losses will occur. And the result of that is that they are having to make already today very large payouts.
And in addition to those large payouts that we've seen on the flip side of that, the insurance companies raising rates, sometimes double-digit, 18, 19, 20% in the wake of some of these storms, especially in some of the storm-prone areas, that's not going to be enough to handle what we're expecting, raising rates?
Yeah, I think we can expect that to continue in the near future because even though insurance companies are, I think they have much more capital now than they used to have before. So in the 1990s, they were caught off guard by a series of hurricanes, which caused mega losses, and 11 insurers went into bankruptcy at that time in the U.S. After Harvey in 2017, no insurer went bust. And this is because they have much more capital than before, because investors, and in particular alternative investors, so pension funds, sovereign wealth funds, are investing in insurance markets because they're looking for returns. So on that front, they're covered to an extent, but they also can raise rates every year. And in fact, every quarter, you can see over the last few quarters, rates have been rising. The last quarter in the U.S., for example, poverty rates have risen by 10%, so that's a double-digit rise, which is quite a lot. And on the other hand, you can see as well that reinsurers, so the companies that insure the insurers and tech cover these insurance companies for mega losses, these ones as well are raising the rates. So it's becoming more expensive for insurers to get insured themselves, in particular in areas which have been hit really hard by big events. So if you look at California, for example, I think next year it's expected that reinsurance rates are going to rise by 30 and 70%, which is enormous.
So what are we looking at here? Are we looking at some of these insurance companies perhaps stopping covering places that are disaster prone, or are we going to see more of these companies go out of business?
I think it's not so likely that companies themselves will go out of business just like that, so it won't be that fast. It's more that, as you say, because premiums will be rising, you can expect probably like three things to happen. The first one is that consumers refuse to pay anymore, so they don't take any coverage, so the business of insurers might shrink. The second thing is that insurers themselves want to keep prices low, or they want to avoid losses, so they will broaden exclusions, or they will put cap on payouts. And the third thing is that regulators will step in. So you've seen this in Florida and California. Regulators have put caps on premium rates so that insurers can't charge as much as they want. And some insurers will just decide not to be in business in this business anymore. They will decide that it's not worth it. And the net result of that, of these three things, is that probably a larger part of the economy will be uninsured.
And that's pretty scary, thinking about, you know, we have these storms and disasters, as you mentioned, every year. It seems like they just keep growing. So what's the answer here? Is there any place in the world where this is being worked out, where there is a potential solution?
Yeah, there's a variety of solutions, and that's the optimistic thing about it. It's not all black, you know. First of all, some years are better than others, even though the trend is pretty clear. But also there are things we can do, or insurers can do more precisely. So insurers can, first of all, at a basic level, they can try and cut their costs by becoming more efficient. So they try and, you know, so some of them try to digitize their operations, to automate claims processing. They try to cut down on fraud by sending drones to disaster areas. All this makes the operations more efficient, and therefore they can keep the cost of policies more affordable. So that's one thing. They can also incentivize customers to take less risk or to adapt against, you know, the risk. So, for example, many home insurers offer discounts if you build a flood wall or if you install metallic shutters on your windows. But this could go further. They could, you know, on the longer term, they could lend money, for example, to municipalities which want to strengthen embankments or which want to build oyster reefs to protect themselves against rising storm surges. So that could work pretty well. In the long run, it's about understanding the risk and communicating the risk so that, I guess, homeowners, for example, or businesses don't take the risk in the first place. So, you know, start building factories on coasts or floodplains and have a more informed behavior.
Yeah, that last part of it is probably a key. I know in some locales they're not letting people rebuild after these big storms come through. But in other places, I know that Texas is a place where there are a few building regulations, and they are still allowing people to build, like in the Houston area, in floodplains. Those seem to be contrary to the warnings that are coming.
I think you're right. I think the policy around this is not responsible everywhere. In some places, it just has to happen because it's an economic center. You still want to have resources, infrastructure in this place and not in any other. And in these cases, sometimes the government can help. For example, I think of an example in Britain where you have about a sixth of homes which are at risk of flooding, which is enormous. Government insurers have set up a scheme called Flood Re, which is a sort of a risk insurance pool in which all insurers in the UK that offer home insurance pay into. And this money is then used to make policies more affordable for people who have homes in floodplains.
Yeah, and the key to that is, though, no more building in high-risk areas. So the future insurance would not be – they would not get future insurance.
That's right. This is really key, and because if we think quite basically, in pretty basic terms about the role of insurance, insurance can only deal with uncertainty. It can't deal with certainty. So if something is really bound to happen, insurance can't really help. In this case, savings can help, or not taking the risk in the first place.
Matthew, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing your reporting. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Matthew Favas, finance correspondent at The Economist. You can read the full article online. We're also going to link out to it this morning as well, but you can find it online, the story about insurance it's actually a five-part series, a multi-part series on climate change and some of the impacts, and we pulled the insurance part of that from it. Again, we'll link out to it in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning.